a dashboard with all your data in it was like best in class. Like that's business intelligence, right? Today, I would argue like dashboards are dead. They're static, they're backward looking. What we really need is data to get into the hands of the people doing the work to drive actions today.
Hello, my name is Amol Nirgodkar.
And I'm AJ Peek.
Welcome to Healthcare 100, the ultimate playbook for scaling in healthcare. Each week, we sit down with operators, investors, innovators behind the fastest growing DSOs and MSOs in the country, including the health tech platforms, to unpack really the strategies, the systems, the capital structures that are driving real growth and moving the needle, right? Plus, we ask our guest one important question, which is, give us one idea to drive $100,000 of EBITDA that somebody can implement right away. So with that in mind, welcome to both my good friends, Elliot Zibel and Mick Jeness of Oak Point and Select and Clarify Health to the podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
It'd be great, maybe starting with Mick, just to tell the audience a little bit of your background and your current group.
Yeah, happy to do it. Great to be here. Great to participate in this. So been at Dental since early 2000, let's call it 2008-09 timeframe. So came in on the product side and then evolved into the DSO side. Helped found a specialty group that was pediatric and orthodontic that grew to 14 locations and that was sold. And then after that business was sold, I started to launch Oak Point shortly thereafter. So within a year of that business being sold, we kicked off Oak Point and launched. So built a thesis in 2018, focused exclusively initially on North Carolina market, and then evolved shortly thereafter into the South Carolina market. We've scaled the business since September of 2019 from one supported practice to now 45. We'll generate $115-116 million in total dental service revenue this year. Exciting, to kind of hit crescendo over that $100 million mark, which is obviously really difficult to do. And it's just been fun building the business. It's been rewarding, incredibly rewarding to go from one location to now 45. So roughly 750 total team members across two states. And we feel really good about where we're headed for this year. So just excited to be here and have the conversation.
Yeah. So my background is sort of an investor, serial entrepreneur for 15 years, started a dental group called Select Dental Management in 2018 with a good friend of mine who was a dentist, and he had bought a practice and grown it substantially. And, our goal was really to create a differentiated, more of a partnership focused model versus like what we call DSO 1.0, which was, hey, we're going to buy 100% of your location and you're going to be an employee. We wanted to create alignment of interest to create better retention rates amongst doctors and team members and patients. We scaled the business to 40 locations and $120 million in revenue in 4 years, made a lot of mistakes along the way, but also accomplished a lot. And I think more important than the growth numbers to me, or the number of locations, is really what we're able to do on the retention side. So we had 96% doctor retention rate, 92% patient retention rates, and we grew same store sales, which everyone likes to talk about these days. We were always focused on that. So, over the past couple of years, the business has grown revenue over 30 and EBITDA north of 70. And that is just driven by, focus on, doing the right thing for the patients, the providers, and the practices. So I look forward to talking about different things that can help drive growth. Since then, I started a technology business called Clarify Health. And effectively, we translate raw data that most times people can't even see or don't even know exists. We translate that into improved patient care and improved EBITDA dollars for dental groups. And I'm also have the pleasure and honor to serve on several boards of private equity backed healthcare companies inside of dental and outside of dental, which I think has given me some really good perspective on different ways to grow multi-site healthcare businesses, because quite honestly, everyone is facing the same challenges.
And today it's titled Data That Talks Back, kind of driving action from dashboards. And maybe starting with you, Mick, it'd be helpful just to describe the pain either you've endured or you've seen your peers endure just in multi-site locations, struggling with kind of data and dashboards.
Yeah, it's obviously when you've got disparate systems, it's so incredibly challenging, right? To get everything integrated and streamlined, especially if you're on multiple PMS systems, which many DSOs are. We're one of those. We've, because we're multi-specialty, we're essentially forced to have multiple systems. It is extremely painful. And when you don't have those protocols in place, streamlined across the various individual practices, right? Those, you know, a simple adjustment may be different from one practice to the next, and be able to streamline that and make that just consistent across the whole organization is extremely challenging to do. So for us, you know, we're using multiple plugin tools, and then we put everything into a product called Domo, and we've normalized all that back end, but it is extremely challenging. And for us, the only way we've been able to be really, truly successful is having an operations person that has deep institutional knowledge down at the site level, former practice manager by trade, a former hygienist by trade, and somebody who just, you know, truly knows data inside and out and can understand where the adjustments are and how to normalize those adjustments. That's how we've been successful. But it is really challenging. And at this, you know, just on the data side for 10 years, and I don't think that I've got it right yet. But, you know, it's getting better and better every day. So,
Elliot?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's different buckets of data, right? And PMS is certainly like one data set, and honestly, like the most important, if we're being honest. There's a lot, if we can't get that data in one place, then we have problems. And certainly, I think it's interesting. You know, when I started out, I was like, why would we integrate or go to one PMS system? Like, we're growing so fast. And if I were to do it again, I would definitely do my best, you know, if possible, to get on one system, because it really solves a lot of issues, not only on the data side, but on the operation side. But in any event, so in the world that we live in, we have the PMS data. We also have our finance data, our HRIS data, our supply data, our labs data, our X-ray AI data, which may be the most valuable data set that nobody's really looking at and operationalizing today. So to me, the challenge is even bigger. I spent a lot of money building a data warehouse, kind of similar to what Mick did in doing normalization on my own, you know, and that helped us a lot to be able to get the data. I would also just differentiate between, like, I think the world is massive, is really changing rapidly, where like 3 years ago, a dashboard with all your data in it was like best in class. Like, that's business intelligence, right? Today, I would argue like dashboards are dead. Like, they're static, they're backward looking. What we really need is data to get into the hands of the people doing the work to drive actions today. And I think that, you know, that is a forward looking, you know, goal and aspiration for us. And I think for other folks in different industries and increasingly dental, but, you know, obviously we need the data, but it's not enough, I would say, to have it all employees have access to. The point of the data is to drive change and to drive value creation. And so I think there's another layer of opportunity, which is, how do we get the data to the people that are actually driving, you know, behavior and activity in the field?
You know, Elliot, I speak about this all the time. There's no point having hindsight, right? And 1.0 dashboards, right? And business, what we call business intelligence, was not intelligence at all. It was just displaying data in a nicer format. It didn't give us any insight of why things happened, and then didn't give us any prescriptions on what we should do next. And that looks like that is the limitation, right? I mean, if I were to ask you a question, both of what are the limitations today of these aftermarket products that are been around for a while, some 5 years, some 10 years, and they call business intelligence tools, how effective are they really in today's day and age in managing a multi-location group?
Yeah, from my perspective, I think one of the biggest things that's missing is the budget to where you're at. So, you know, what's been produced for the month, what's scheduled, and what's the budget or the goal for the month, right? And so when you look at the, you know, a lot of the off-the-shelf tools, they don't have those, they don't have that basic fundamental KPI in place that a good operator could look at the fifth day of the month, the 10th day of the month, 15th day of the month. Are we tracking to plan for the month, or are we going to be behind for the month, right? And then what levers can we pull operationally with the schedule, et cetera, to be able to drive to those budgeted goals? So what we've done is actually, the reason why we built it ourselves is that we built that single KPI in mind with all of the adjustments already in the what's scheduled. So when we look at what's been produced, we know what's been produced on a net adjusted basis. When we look at what's scheduled, we look at that on a net adjusted basis. We know exactly how we're tracking for the month. Without that, we'd be flying blind down the street, right? And I think personally, from my perspective, that's the biggest, you know, piece of the puzzle that's missing. The second one is being able to integrate the various systems. Like Elliot said, you know, one of the biggest ones is phones, right? How do you build a house? You can't start with the roof. You got to start with the foundation. And from our perspective, the phones are the foundation. If you can't answer the phones correctly, you really shouldn't even be doing this. I mean, you just go do something else, right? So, you know, and we're passionate about that, and be able to look at that KPI data and seeing how you're tracking on an execution basis is fundamental to driving great customer service and great patient care. So
I'm not going to disagree with the phone thing for sure. I'm not going to disagree with that.
It was because I had a phone call coming in. I think a phone call came and that's what happened. So
Elliot, the limitations, we're talking about the limitations of these aftermarket products. And
yes,
it was part of the reason why you started Clarify Health is because they were so limited in insight and foresight. They were just pretty dashboards, but you couldn't do much with it. So tell us a little bit about your journey there and why you really wanted to start Clarify.
I didn't want to start Clarify, to be clear. I felt compelled to start Clarify because I found these challenges, just like Mick did, you know, to be substantial. And I felt like they needed to be solved to really help the patients and help the industry. I think when I looked at it, and I've known all the players there, we have like one tale of like, we've got nice visualizations in an environment that's completely not scalable to enterprise. And then we have the opposite, which is we've got a bunch of data not usable by the office. All of those are just data. It's just data, right? And I think part of what Mick touched on that resonated with me was, you know, you got to have operations people that understand the business, understand the data. Furthermore, like, we need to get the data, you know, again, in a way that is digestible and understandable to the people that are driving behaviors. And it can't be like 875,000 metrics and rows and lines and what have you. Like, when we give them that data, that's our opportunity to drive their focus. And so I think that what these tools fail to do is they fail to identify opportunity on an apples-to-apples basis. Like, should I be focusing on call answering, or should I be focusing on adult fluoride, or should I be focusing on supply expense? Like, we need to be able to look at that on an apples-to-apples basis from a dollars basis in my mind. Secondly, like, what do we actually prioritize? Like, what's the easiest stuff to do with the least amount of effort and most reward? And third, which none of them really do, is like, how do we drive execution? And execution is all about change management. What's change management about? It's about data and communication. Yet we're not touching the providers. Like, I can't emphasize, I'm going to say this 100 times on this call. I've talked to so many doctors and hygienists in the dental world. They don't have any data. They don't know where they stand. They don't know what's happening in front of them tomorrow. They don't know what happened yesterday. How can we as an industry expect to be excellent if we don't give data to the providers? Not only that, like, taking a step even further back, which is something I've been learning a lot about, is like, we don't even have standards. Like, when you look at the medical world with Medicare Advantage, and there's a standard called HEDIS, it's a measurement tool in medical. There's standards for, this is how often you should do diagnostic work on these types of patients. And then we measure against that. If we're doing that and doing it well, we get paid more. If we don't do it as well, we get paid less. We're missing that tethering. And so to me, it's all about defining the standards, measuring versus standards, using that gap to understand opportunity. And the last thing I'll say is, like, benchmarks. Like, where are the benchmarks? How do we can't identify outliers and opportunity without a standard or a benchmark. So we believe that every important number needs to be benchmarked, because that's how we are able to drive identification of opportunity and prioritization by how we are, you know, performing versus benchmark.
Well said.
Yeah, just curious, how critical is it? And Elliot, you've already kind of maybe answered part of the question, to tailor, you know, what you see based upon the role in the dental office. And just how are you both thinking about that? You know, you both were nodding your head that, you know, the people in the field need to get the data. So how are you doing it? Is everybody looking at the same thing, or is it different if I'm a, you know, office manager versus regional manager versus, you know, a CEO of a business?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we've kind of broken it down kind of twofold, kind of, let's call it C-suite KPI data, and then operational KPI data. And that operational data set is used across the whole organization. So we have distilled it down a little bit more for the PMs, but not a lot more. And so, you know, to Elliot's point, look, at the end of the day, there's, let's call it 6-7 things that can really move the needle. Sure, there's 100 pieces of data you can look at, but it is paralysis by analysis after some point. Right. And, you know, what are the 5, 6, 7 things that are going to really truly make sure that, you know, you're going to drive to the goals and objectives for the month, quarter, year? You've got to do it, you know, small bites at a time and look at just a handful of things. And as long as those things are tracking, you know, you're going to be good. And so we've done a good job of that. And I think, you know, some of the off-the-shelf product are a bit too much, you know, personally speaking. I think it's just a lot, you know, to log into those, you know, various platforms. And it is overwhelming, the amount of data that's in there. I mean, it can be extremely overwhelming, especially if you're not trained to really look at it or trained to understand, you know, the various pieces. So from our perspective, that's how we've handled it.
Yeah, no, that's I agree with everything you said. I think that too much data is just as bad as no data, because they both lead to inaction, right? And neither of them are driving value, which is the whole point of what we're trying to do with the data. You know, I think that in a perfect world, like, we customize, like, the C-level sees, you know, the stuff the C-level needs to understand, which goes from 50,000 feet to, you know, this was the invoice, this was the transaction or whatever it is, right? Like, we need that data for a lot of reasons. The regionals have a different need, right? They should only see their locations and information that's important for their budgets. Same with the practices. And then the providers have a totally different need. So it's the same data that we basically repackage and visualize in different ways, depending on the behaviors we're trying to drive. To me, like, the provider level, when we get down to that level, it's like a patient, right? When we come in, if a patient has periodontal disease, we treat the perio. If they need ortho, we treat the ortho. The providers are the same. If they're doing a great job of diagnosing treatment, but a terrible job of presenting, like, then we want to hit them a little bit more and highlight that, hey, like, your number, like, 250 out of 250 doctors on treatment plan acceptance, and here's how we actually can help you change that behavior. So I think it's important. Again, this is like data 2.0. So data 1.0 is like, let's get everything in one place, and that's really important. We can't run before we walk. But the running and the exciting part of it becomes when we're taking the data to, you know, with a rifle, identify the things we need to do to drive improvement, to Mick's point, to pull levers. So when we're communicating with the location, that location might have a huge opportunity in fluoride, and another location might have a huge opportunity in diagnostics. And I need to be able to show each one of those individually that, hey, if you do this, here's how it's going to help you hit your budget or bonus or whatever it is. So I think, like, that is hard, to be clear, and takes engineering and lots of resource and so on. But, like, I think that's where, you know, we are going, and we are. I think it's harder for, like, DSOs to do, because, quite honestly, like, the industry is, honestly, if we're being really intellectually honest with ourselves, like, we massively underinvested in tech.
Yeah.
Like, there's no engineers in dental. Not many. Like, most large DSOs have no engineers. I got 12 engineers working for me, right? So I can do some of this stuff, right? I can do it. I can have them reorganize, and they're on top of the data and validating all this stuff. But, like, even the largest DSOs maybe have one. Maybe. So I think that the unfortunate part of it is, like, all this is great, but, you know, how do we actually get it, you know, at scale in the industry? And I just think it's going to be on people like me and others to innovate, to solve these problems on the data side and on the communication side, because I just don't think we have enough technology capital inside of these businesses to drive it.
Yeah, that's well said. One of the things we've really attempted to do is build the data set in a way that drives the behavior in the order in which we want it driven. So, you know, what do you want done first, you know, versus second versus third, right? And you know, kind of going back to the house analogy, you've got to be able to answer the phones. You've got to be able to be attentive to the patient, you know, the immediate, whether it's a chat bot on a text message outreach from the patient, or whether it's a phone, you've got to be attentive. And that's the first step in the whole patient journey through the life cycle, right? And then kind of look at the data set and build it according to that life cycle. It is definitely not easy to do, but, you know, we've done a good job of it and just continue to refine it. And by no means is where we're at today is, you know, we have a vision for where we want to be. And I'd love to be there, you know, tomorrow, but, you know, truthfully, it's going to take us probably another year to 2 years to get there. It just takes a lot of time to really dial it in and get it right. But, you know, what we have, I think, you know, it's done a nice job of driving the behavior. And we can have confidence, you know, when we're talking to our investor base, we can have confidence of where we're at for the month, how we're tracking for the month or the quarter.
I mean, the amount of data that exists, and we deal with this a lot at Patient Prism, where, you know, what's the five things that are most important? And we don't need to vomit all this data on everybody else. People already don't have any time to do anything more than what they need to do. And it's the dental office is already inundated with all sorts of things that are going on. The engineering point was interesting. I think I remember reading Elon's biography this past year, and he said the path to a CEO's office is not through the CFO or the marketing department, it's through engineering. And he was talking really about technology companies, but it's true. In today's day, in the world of AI and digital transformation and And I think engineering becomes probably the most important skill set for any organization, whether you're healthcare or technology, because if we're not uncovering these insights and giving people the exact few nuggets of information they need to know to act upon to make the needle move, then it's all just dashboards and data and truly a lack of intelligence. There's no business intelligence, but it's totally lack of intelligence. And I think the definition, we need to change that too, of what intelligence is. It's not regurgitating the past, but it's answering you questions that you've never seen before. It's a great point. It's a great point about engineering. But at what point do, let's say we've got a lot of middle market DSOs, you know, starting out 5 locations, 10 locations. They're trying to make a decision about what to do, right? And what direction to go in. And at what point do you invest in your own solution like you did, Mick, you did. Elliot, obviously you're trying to solve for that for these guys. What point do you need to start thinking about this? At what number of locations where you said, all right, well, I need better data and I need better intelligence than what the traditional solutions are giving me?
So I think like the earlier the better, I'm sure. Mick's probably going to say it gets a lot harder. Like if you know what you want, where you want to get to, and I think that's the problem with a lot of people, like even larger companies, like they don't know what is actually possible today. They're like looking at their solution, like, well, this is better than what we had. And like, I think this is okay, but they don't understand like what is actually like what good or great looks like. I think once you understand that, doing it sooner is way easier and just going to save you a lot of gray hairs and money over time. And it's easier to set up 1 location or 2 or 3 than it is to set up 30 retroactively. So I think the other thing I would say, like, this data problem is being exacerbated by AI. Like I talk to people, they're like, AI is going to just clean up our data and like going to do everything for our practices. Mick can do that because he's got the data organized and understand, and his organization understands it. We can do that. But if you don't have the data like organized and understandable, then none of these AI solutions are going to work well. And so the gap between the haves and have nots is going to grow wider, and people that don't have data are going to miss out on the opportunity to completely reset the cost structure of dental. And we can talk about that. It's probably worth talking about in more detail, is that there is an opportunity if we all use our brains and forget the way we've done things historically to do things a totally different way, much more cost effectively and better for, you know, patients, providers, and for our companies. But it's only possible if we have great data. So
as you think of the data in AI use cases around the corner next year or two, like anything you guys are thinking about, like use cases that, hey, we think in 6-12 months, you know, we're going to put AI to work based upon, Elliot, the platform you're building, Mick, you've built. Anything you guys are talking about at the management level?
I personally haven't seen anything yet that's exciting. There's a lot of AI tools that we're looking at for different functional areas within the business, administrative, rev cycle, phones, et cetera. All of that is truly exciting. A lot of it's very early stage still, and we'll see kind of how that all plays out. But I haven't seen anything yet on the data front that, you know, that's gotten us excited. But I'm all ears if you guys have something or see something, I'd love to know about it, because we'll look at anything.
I mean, I think that there's the cost side of the equation. And I think that, you know, you've got about 25 different phone AI companies that have popped up over the last year that are quite honestly solving like a very like real problem that AI like is going to be able to solve. And I know it's like, there's going to be, you know, folks like Amal and others that are going to solve this problem, and it's solvable. We got people answering the phones that are not paid a lot of money, that turn over at a very high rate, and that we want to stick to scripts. Like that is like the definition of like what you can disrupt with AI. Now it's got to be more than just wrapping something on top of ChatGPT. Like that's not value add, and that's not scalable, and that's not the way we're going to be able to, companies like Mix are going to be able to like do this, you know, at an enterprise level. We then go to RCM, and I've seen companies that are fully automating, you know, eligibility, claim submission, you know, verification. I mean, when I say fully automating, like there's still people, but a lot less than they would need. And so I think that RCM is obviously a big opportunity on the cost side. And then on the revenue side is really, honestly, we're focusing more on the revenue side. And, you know, we can't like full cycle automate things like your traditional view of like an agent or what have you. And by the way, AI is like way overused. And like, we could talk a lot about that too, because a lot of what we're doing, people think is AI, but it's not technically. But I think what we're really focusing on is like decision-making support. So what Nick said, like, hey, we want people to focus on A, B, and C in that order. What we're doing is, you know, as an example, like if we're talking about Perio, we're basically able to show you like from the exterior eye data, we could show you that, hey, this provider saw 100 patients last month at Perio and only diagnosed Perio in 25 of them. Now, we can trigger action behind that and say, okay, what do we want to do with those providers that aren't diagnosing Perio? Well, we want to alert their hygiene leader. Great. We can send a Slack message to their hygiene leader saying, you know, this person's not diagnosing Perio. We can send a education course from our LMS to that provider and mandate that they get over an 80% on that before they get off of our rehab program. We can have those charts of those patients be audited. So I think where it really becomes really powerful is like the activities that you're triggering on the back of that. The problem is that a lot of the early movers to tech and dental have no idea about dental. They don't know anything about it. So to do that behavior to support these like sophisticated enterprises and companies, like you need to understand like the use cases, the challenges. And I think like that's where the opportunity is. And it's going to take some time to be able to like, you know, do that, you know, at scale. We're starting with hygiene because like that's the opportunity we see is like the biggest opportunity for every dental group you look at. They're not taking x-rays. They're not perio probing. The perio visit percentage for over 30 is 15%, and 50% of patients over 30 at perio, like doesn't add up. Like there's all these things that are, you know, definable and obvious that we can start to highlight. And we found like we drive meaningful growth when we can identify a problem and start communicating it. So I'm more excited about the revenue side, you know, because that's what we're focusing on. But I do think the cost side, like over the next 12 months, we're going to see some solutions that actually can scale to enterprise on the cost side. And I think that if I were to start a DSO today, which I'm not doing, I would tell you that overhead in DSOs is probably what, like 5% on low end, like 10 on the high end, call it 7 on average. Like there's no chance like I would have an overhead structure over 2% of revenue, like, or 2.5%. Like you can do this way differently. Again, if we just rethink the way we're doing things, like, you know, so I see some organizations, they have 150 RCM people like doing collections. You're like, that doesn't make sense.
That's
right.
That's not sustainable. Right.
And coincidentally, I was the slowest of the three of us to build a $100 million business. It took me 17 years, not like 4 or 5, like the two of you. So I didn't have you guys as role models, unfortunately. But on this data, I have thought about it a lot. And credit card companies have been scoring transactions from a risk standpoint real time forever. And in healthcare and in dental, we're all capacity constrained. You know, there's just not enough providers. And yet there's tons of consumer demand, and Patient Prism and other tools and all can speak to that. And so being able to score the candidly lifetime value of the patient and provide scheduling management insights and optimization, I think is the biggest lever AI could do. And it's intimately, we have all the data on these patients. We have more data than a credit card company has in terms of transactions. So being able to like, you know, chatbot, phone call, they're in the hygiene chair, being able to score that patient and give scheduling optimization decisions like where to put them and when to put them, I think could be incredible for all healthcare, but certainly dental.
Absolutely.
And growing revenue.
Yeah. Facility utilization across the board. That'd be that's a fantastic application for AI. Who's going to do it?
I've seen some companies that are like toying around with it. I'm quite honestly, like, it's not that, to your point, like once you have the data, it's not that difficult to do that. Now we have to think of what are the characteristics we're scoring off of, et cetera. I also think the other opportunity is scoring the health of patients. Like we could do more with, you know, and I know some of the X-ray AI companies are doing different things to say, hey, you know, cause we see the patient and we think this is the problem, but what I'm interested in seeing, like if I have 1 million patient records and I know I've seen 50,000 patients with this same issue and they all lose all their teeth, like to me, that's also another data point that's interesting to look at, is like what's happened statistically to people in this similar situation. And, you know, can we standardize this a little bit more, you know, dentistry? Like I know it's like this urban myth that like, oh, no, dentistry can't be standardized. Every other medical profession is fairly standardized, but dentistry is totally different. Like I don't really fully believe that. I think it really is, again, an issue of like, we're not defining standards and we're not measuring against those standards. And I think if we can, as an industry, and I know the ADA and other folks are working to create more definitions of what does quality care look like, but I think the more we can define the standards, the more we can actually start to, you know, provide the right care to patients. And, you know, we'll talk about EBITDA growth opportunity, but, you know, my opportunity that I see is like, provide the level of care to the patients that your doctors want to provide, like, and then we're all going to grow and have really successful companies. But I just don't see that happening today.
This episode of Healthcare 100 is sponsored by Patient Prism. Patient Prism is the number one growth platform for healthcare groups looking to scale faster and smarter. For over a decade, Patient Prism has perfected AI-enabled patient acquisition and is now enhancing lead nurturing to guide patients seamlessly through their entire journey from initial acquisition to long-term retention. Combining cutting-edge AI agents and CRM automation tools, Patient Prism intelligently matches patient demand with organizational capacity, ensuring that every practice fills schedules with the right patients. From AI-powered call tracking and conversational analytics to real-time performance insight, Patient Prism empowers multi-site healthcare organizations to capture more opportunities, enhance patient experience, and significantly boost revenue across all locations. If you're committed to growth and passionate about leveraging AI and automation to turn every lead into a loyal patient, visit patientprism.com to discover how leading DSOs and MSOs are achieving unparalleled results and gaining a powerful competitive advantage.
Now, one of the things I think about a lot is how do we predict better financial performance, and how do we detect things early on, and what are some of the leading indicators that can tell us that, hey, we're going in the right direction, the wrong direction, and then course correct, right? There's a lot of a use case for AI to look at that. But Elliot, I agree with you that part of the reason why you guys have invested so much in data is to know some of those indicators, right? Some of the C-level KPIs. The question is very tactical here, is at what point in the month do you know, what are some of the leading indicators you look at that early on in the month are going to tell you that, hey, I think things are going per budget, not per budget, and then here's what levers we need to move before the month is over, and let's make sure we don't, you know, let's make sure we look at that. Is there anything that, like magical KPIs that you guys have developed that you can share that are leading indicators of problems or just good things happening?
You want to start,
Mike? Proactive versus reactive, right? I think maybe just rewinding the tape for a second. When you look at many of the DSOs out there, they don't have the data sets built out to be able to proactively determine where they're going to be for the month. So they are flying blind. And that's, I think, a lot of the challenges in the industry, you know, that I've personally seen. So I don't know about magical, Amal, but, you know, just a couple that we look at, you know, closely, how many clinical days are scheduled, you know, we're in the month of May, you know, right now, how many clinical days on a per site basis do we have booked and scheduled for the month of June as an example, right? And okay, you know, at X location, you know, we've got 12 clinical days booked. Well, why? Because doctor's going to Africa for 2 weeks with his family. Okay, great. That completely understand that. And we know that, and we can be out in front of that and operate accordingly. So clinical days, you know, just a huge one. And then, you know, going back to the original, you know, the beginning part of the conversation, the KPI that we've built out it truly drives our visibility in the business is looking at, you know, what has been scheduled, or what's already completed for the month, what's scheduled, and what that delta is, if there is, are we above plan, below plan, you know, how are we tracking for the month? We can look at that on, you know, day one of the month, right? And so we can look, you know, very, very clearly on the first day of the month and have really good visibility down to the site level. Globally, of course, everything's aggregated, but then down onto the site level. I geek out on this stuff. I mean, and again, those are the just a couple that, you know, we look at, and we know, look, if we've got a doctor scheduled with 17 clinical days for the month, we know that these doctors don't want to go into that office and just sit around. They want to crank out the work. They want to work. They want to see patients. I mean, that it's in their DNA, right? To see patients. And it's our job to support that. So
let me probe a little deeper in that. Let's assume they're scheduled for every single day. Like, and it's great. Like whatever, 22 days in a month, they're scheduled. But do you guys look at productivity in terms of what productivity that's going to come out of the scheduled days, or is just there's bodies there, all revenue is the same, and or are we looking at scheduling for productivity in terms of what's the revenue per hour we're going to generate from these scheduled days? Do you go deeper in that?
Yeah, we do. We're down at the revenue per day globally, not down to the hour. That's something that's on the road, the development roadmap, short-term development roadmap. But we can very effectively look at, you know, tomorrow's schedule and say, okay, it's a Friday. You know, we should book X dollars in revenue on a typical Friday. All right, we're going into the holiday weekend. It's going to be a little lighter. You know, we know exactly what those are based on, you know, past year's performance. So we've got all that dialed in and can look at that and very efficiently say, okay, you know, we really should truly be, you know, at $500,000 in scheduled net adjusted production for a Tuesday. Why do we only have 350 on the books? And what do we have to do? You know, what can we do to go, you know, move the needle, right? You know,
I love that.
Where does the capacity exist inside the system? And how do we reach into that unscheduled treatment bucket, which is, you know, by the way, you've got 45 locations, is millions and millions and millions of dollars, millions of dollars in any given moment of unscheduled treatment. So there's always opportunity between the unscheduled treatment bucket, the phones. I mean, there's always opportunity, you know, to pull patients forward into the schedule and make things more efficient. And somebody taught me a long time ago, this business is no different than a flight, you know, that leaves, you know, Chicago to New York with 20 empty seats on the plane. You can never, ever recapture that lost revenue. It's gone forever, right, that day. And so anything you can do to make, you know, these facilities efficient and keep the doctors, you know, busy, which they love to treat patients, right? And it's our job to support that. At the end of the day, it's all about supporting the doctors and the patient care.
That makes a lot of sense. How about you, Elliot? I mean, how do you kind of look at that?
So I think I learned the hard way about working days. It's a big deal. And if you want to grow your business and working days are down 10%, good luck. It's not possible. And so that working day is probably the metric I see every large institution when they budget is budgeting off working days and revenue per working day. Very few are down to the hour from what I see. And then, you know, like, it, you know, if you have a problem or not, and to Mick's point, you can try to correct for it. If you realize that working days are going to be down, you know, 15% in July, you do what you can to correct for that before July comes. You know, from working days, I have a kind of a handful of metrics that I look at, like, for the drivers of the business. But I totally agree. We did the same thing that Mick did, where we, day one, I would always look the first of the month and I'd say, if my budget is $5 million, what am I scheduled on a net production basis starting out that month? Now, the interesting thing for our data, not everyone entered stuff in the same way. And, you know, sometimes it was the fee schedules weren't maybe, you know, inputted appropriately. So there was like a build, like if we started out on 4 million, we typically would add 15 percentage points to that 4 million from start to finish of the month. Because by the way, also a mall comes in, he gets diagnosed with something. We do same day treatment or we put it in the schedule that day. So there was like a building. We started like handicapping, like, oh, well, we're at zero, so we think we're going to be up 15, or we're at minus 10, we think we're going to be up 5. But, you know, we had that sort of intelligence too, which is really helpful to understand like where you're starting. You know, I think if we step back farther, like when we think about productivity, there's working days. The second thing is visits per working day. And we break that down for doctor and hygiene, right? And so if you have working days growing, visits per working day growing, your total visits are growing, right? Great, check. Then it's visits times production per visit equals production, gross production dollars, right? So the levers really we're trying to impact are visits and production per visit. And there's different ways to impact the visits. And, you know, I think a big one, you know, on the visit side is we look at active patients. So you might have a short-term healthy business, but if your active patients, which are, I define as patients that have been over the past 18 months, are declining, like so at some point you're going to pay the piper and see that in your business. So for the canary in the coal mine, like we like to look at retention. We like look at active patient growth. We like to look at number of future appointments because that's telling us like what's going to happen tomorrow or the next day. And again, like the results might be hanging in there, but to me, the only sustainable way to grow in dental or any four-wall business is to drive visitation growth, right? And that's what, you know, what when we talk about same-store growth, like, of course, everyone wants to see same-store, but if it's all pricing-driven versus volume-driven, there's way more value and, you know, repetition capability or sticking capability from being able to systemically grow volume in your business. Some of the other things are like more short term. Like we did this, we pulled this lever, we did that. Like it gets, you know, discounted, or we got to come up with another way to do that next year. But if we can figure out ways to sustainably grow volume, whether it's new patients, you know, et cetera, then that's really the key to driving long-term, you know, same-store sales growth in our businesses.
Completely relate managing the business top-down or what investors, the pains and scar tissue I have on doctor days and visits per day and dollars per visit to get growth. How are you guys thinking about, and we talked about on the front end of this conversation, what do you give to the office manager? You both have been a multi-site. You guys understand what you need at your level. Are you just driving it down to your operational leaders and it's a relationship game, or are you giving your office managers data that they can go do something with? Like, how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, we've built our data set so that the PMs have total visibility into that data set. And we have worked hard to distill it down into just a handful of things that are going to really, truly matter. Because it's overwhelming and there's so many things going on at the front desk, right? To me, it's you know, pretty much the most difficult job in all of dentistry is running the front desk. And so our ability as operators to distill it down and simplify, you know, these things on behalf of that team, the more we can simplify it and just continue to drive that simplification in the narrative, drive that narrative, you know, home, the better. It's not easy. I'm not saying we're perfect at it, but it's something we're constantly a work in progress to continue to coach and teach and train the PMs on, you know, what to stay focused on and not allowed to get distracted.
If we talk to them in your group, Mick, like, I'm curious, what are the like two things that they like, Mick is always talking about, everybody's, you know, hammering about, what are like the top two that spent a lot of time coaching them to understand and do something about?
Maybe just a couple more than two. So I'd say, you know, start with the phones. That's huge. We want to be at 95% or better there. And then the labor rate, the supply level, and the labs. And it's just constant, you know, from CFO, CEO, right down through the whole organization, you know, that's it. And then of course, clinical days, right? And so we know if the clinical days are there and we know that the schedule's open and we know that we can hit those, you know, three or four other items, you know, we're going to have a great month, you know, and we're going to hit budget and goal and have a really successful month and, you know, do great work for the patient and be responsive to the patient and deliver great care. And that's the name of the game.
Yeah, no, I think that's those are great. I think what you're referring to, we did it a similar way. You know, first of all, we had bonus plans that were like our office managers get paid, like based on, like, we called it like controllable gross profit. There's different ways to do it, but the expenses you mentioned are exactly the ones that, like, what can they actually impact and control, right? To me, if I look at my portfolio practices and I have some at 30%+ margins, which are great, and some at like low double digits, the gap is almost entirely driven typically by non-doctor compensation expense. That's typically what, from what I've seen, what the variance is. And that is a really, really important metric to understand. And we started predicting that. Similar to how we were predicting gross production dollars, we were predicting, hey, based on your gross production, we're predicting this is what we think your non-doctor comp is going to be. And if you're over 25 or whatever the number is, like, we want you to think about how can we change that. So I think that those controllable expenses are where we, you know, need to focus those folks on. And I also think that, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity. I've thought about this more and on my free time that I have now, which is, you know, the morning huddle is honestly so underutilized in dental. Like, if we sit here, like, we're in corporate or wherever we are, and there's 50 locations all over the place, we're not going to make it to all those locations. The morning huddle is the only opportunity we have to focus the team on the things we want them to focus on. And so to me, that becomes a really, really valuable tool that we can actually start to standardize. To your question, AJ, the hardest thing for all of us, it's like, how do we get everyone to focus on the stuff we want them to focus on consistently at scale in a very decentralized business where we're trying to give autonomy to people, right? Like, and the answer is like aligned incentives, aligned goals, communication. And to me, that morning huddle is really cool because we can toggle it around. If this 90-day period we're focusing on FMX, like, I can highlight that in the upper right and put a green, you know, edge around it or whatever we want to do. So I think again, like, if we think about, like, what can we do with the data and how do we use that to drive scale and growth at scale, I think that the morning huddle becomes, you know, the morning huddle and is really an important part of it, to giving the office managers or practice leaders, whatever you call them, like the tools to focus the team. And I think that's something that's a big opportunity, but certainly the P&Ls and the bonus plans are really, really important as well. And I think the morning huddles are just a great tool to support that.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal comment. There's definitely, like, when I look at our business, there's a direct correlation between the doctors and the teams that run exceptional morning huddle and their performance.
Totally.
It's just incredible. It's a direct one-to-one correlation. I've sat in on hundreds of them. It's a lot of fun. They can get out in front of, you know, complex situations that are ahead of them for the day, set the tone, you know, for the organization, for, you know, for the group. It's fantastic. It's a great point.
I think you mentioned something, and anybody that's built a dental group, you struck my curiosity on labor rates and, you know, tracking it. And we went to great lengths to get actionable data. Like, how have you done it at a 10,000 foot level at the office manager level? Because I don't think we've ever quite got there. The group that I helped build, we got to the sort of regional manager level, but are you able to give them that kind of insight, sort of the, you know, where they're trending in labor weekly?
Yeah.
That, like, 10,000 foot level, somebody thinking and listening to this, how did you think about it and set it
up? Yeah, I'll walk you through how we did. So basically what we did was, we know, like, the hours are fairly static, right, in a week or 2 week basis, right? So we had the schedules, like, Mary works X number of hours. And so we focus on, again, the non-doctor comp stuff. And so we had the hours, we had the salaried employees, and we would basically update it every time there's a payroll run. So we would take so once we had the payroll for that, you know, the first 2 weeks, then we could sit there and say, okay, these were your payroll costs. This is what we're forecasting the next payroll to look like. And then basically it's just a simple calc versus, you know, your, you know, again, what Mick and I are tracking, which is like your anticipated net production, which should equal your collections. And so you take that labor cost estimate divided by your net production cost, and you get to a number, and we would highlight it. We show it to everybody, our regionals and our practice leaders, and we'd highlight it red if you're above, you know, certain levels. Now, if we're being honest, there's not a lot you can do on the cost side in the short term, especially in this environment, if you want to keep your employees. Like, people want to work the hours they want to work. To me, the other thing we could do a better job of in dentistry is, like, revenue growth solves a lot of freaking problems, like a lot of problems, right? So if we can, a lot of times, like, we see a cost issue on a percentage basis, it's not a cost problem, it's a revenue problem, right? And you have a doctor doing $3,000 a day and one doing 10, guess what? $10,000 a day, everything looks hunky-dory. It doesn't mean they're efficient. Just means they have a doctor that's producing more, right? So sometimes, you know, we also got down to another level, not just on percentage of revenue, but we started looking at how many assistant hours per doctor visit do you have? How many front office hours per total visit do you have? And we started seeing some of our more profitable practices were not efficient because, you know, we weren't bothering them because they were like in the clear on the numbers. But when we started showing people, the owners of the practice were like, hey, this is, they're like, you know what? We are heavy right now on that. And, like, maybe we can do that a different way if we're doing, like, you know, 2 hours per visit and everyone else is at an hour, right? So I think that there's two ways to do it. One on activity basis, one on the percentage of revenue basis. Neither's perfect. I think doing both and interrelating them is the most powerful. And just engaging, like, giving the relative data to your owners and your partners is great, because I can sit here and say the target's 20%. They're like, yeah, Elliot, great, that's awesome. But if I show you that, you know, the other thing we did with the data Mick was saying, it's like, on a monthly basis, I'll show you your supply expense versus all of our locations. You're 45 out of 45. Okay, like, let's talk about it. Like, I'm not making stuff up. Like, how do we help you remove that barrier? So the relative ranking amongst, you know, offices, providers, that is really powerful. If you have the right people, which hopefully we all do in our organization, that are competitive, no one wants to be last. And we don't need to do it publicly. We don't need to shame people. But I think it's important that we give them that visibility, not just around what we want them to do, but how they're performing, you know, versus peers objectively.
Yeah, I mean, nobody wants to be last. You're right. I mean, you give people math, and math is math. It's objective. It's not an opinion. It's just math. And we talk to lots of doctors across the country about the same thing. Like, here's the data. You know, your specialty folks have to wait 4 weeks for an appointment. That's the data. You decide. You not need any marketing. You not need any more patients. We'll stop the marketing, because that specialty, that ortho person who wants a new appointment, is not going to come visit you in 4 weeks. So you decide. It's not our decision. Math just tells you that. And I think part of what you guys are saying is You know, if you can get the data in front of these people, they'll probably make the decision that's in their best interest and the best interest of the patient. But it's uncovering this data is the hard part, because it's, you get so lost in it. And part of what you both have done is kind of synthesize what's the most important data by the type of person that needs to look at it, and then figure out, well, if you tell them they're 45 out of 45, they probably want to be 40 next month, and maybe something will move.
Yeah. Now, you put the right data in front of a, let's just pick the functional area, right? You put the right data in front of a phenomenal practice manager and just watch what happens, right? And contextualize it and put a little coaching around it. And it's amazing what will happen. It's incredible how much more efficient, you know, that facility will operate. And that's, look, at the end of the day, that's what we're here for, right? Providing data, helping to contextualize it a bit, right? Breaking it down, you know, for the teams and getting them the information that they want, doing it in a transparent fashion. You know, data drives accountability, it drives engagement, right? So that's the piece of this puzzle. It's not easy to do. It's very challenging to get it right. But boy, when you do it, it's pretty fun to watch.
Comes a lot easy. It just becomes a lot easier to manage your business. Like from my perspective, pre getting my data house in order versus post, like the amount of micromanaging and in the weeds, you know, having to be in the weeds because I didn't really understand honestly what was happening, to being able to like give people, like in marketing, this is our goal. Like, did you hit it or not? You hit it, great. You're on budget, wonderful. Like, if you're not, let's talk about it. Like, it was just easy to be able to better delegate and to elevate, you know, myself and be able to do the stuff that I like and I was better at. And I think the last part of the data part that's important to think about is like, if we can do everything Mick said and also inline incentives alongside of it. So we identified this as an opportunity, you know, we can help you, train you, et cetera. And if you execute on it, you get more money. That's like, that's when you know, like you're going to drive. To me, that's like, I always look for like, you know, incentives drive behaviors. And so I want to find the opportunity and I want to figure out a way. For me, it's like, how do we create a win-win for everybody where if we grow or lower our supply expense, then EBITDA grows and we'll give the practice leader a chunk of that. Or maybe it's someone else who's managing supply expense. But we always look for that. Like if we're looking to move a metric, we want to know and we want to be able to communicate with the providers and the team that if they move the metric, there's something in it for them. I think that's a really important part of it too.
As we look to wrap up this conversation, one of the things that's been really passionate for Amol and I is to kind of impart for our listeners, if you were imagine you're half the size of the groups you built, $20, $40, $50 million operation, what's something that executive, that founder could go do in the next 6 months on this topic of data, visualization, dashboards to drive 100K of EBITDA rapidly?
I mean, for me, I would start truly with the phones. And I honestly, it's amazing to me how many people are not tracking it at the level that I believe that they should. And that's going to set the tone for all a whole host of other positive things for the organization, right? But just answering the phones, you're probably beating out, you know, 90% of most platforms out there, really, maybe more. So that would be the one, that would be the one metric I would encourage everybody to start tracking, you know, very carefully down onto the site level. And, you know, work with the teams and then share that institutional knowledge that, you know, with the practices that are answering phones at 95% or better, you know, there's things that they're doing, right? That everybody should be doing, and taking that institutional knowledge and, you know, just educating the rest of the teams on that across the whole organization, very powerful.
Yeah. So I'll give you, I would have them measure FMX. So if they have a standard, whether it's 3, 4, 5 years, measure what percentage of patients are actually getting that every 3, 4, 5 years, and then do your best to help them understand who's coming in that needs an FMX. We've seen, honestly, in most groups, only 50% of patients are getting an FMX every 5 years, right? Think about that for a second. It's $100 more per patient visit. And not to mention, you know, X-ray AI is fed off of X-rays, so doesn't really work well without X-rays. Better diagnostic percentage, better treatment planning, better treatment acceptance rates. To me, X-rays are something that we are have a lot of opportunity for improvement, and they drive a lot of other things.
This is great. What a conversation. We could go on all day and talk about everything else that's going on in our organizations. Thank you so much for investing your time with us. We appreciate it. We're excited to have you part of the playbook that's gonna be out there for the world to see on how to really leverage data that talks back to you and going beyond what we've always done in this industry was just have too much data, but then figuring out how to get insights and foresight from it. So appreciate the conversation, Mick.
Yeah, it's been
Elliot.
Great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning into Healthcare 100. If you found today's episode valuable, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. For more insights, resources, and episodes, head on over to healthcare100podcast.com. Until next time, keep scaling smarter. You've got the playbook. Now go build the future of healthcare.